Coming to you live from downtown Detroit, this is Benzinga's Pre-Market Prep with your host, Joel Elkanen.
This is a volatile puppy here, isn't it?
And Dennis Dick.
I've bitten a penny. I will buy the stock for a penny.
With everything you need to start your trading day.
Good morning, traders and investors. Welcome to this Friday, final day of March edition of Benzinga's Pre-Market Prep. I'm Spencer Israel here with Joel Elkanen and Dennis Dick. On today's show, we are hunting around for some movers. A bit of a light day when it comes to news. We got a few stocks to discuss, but we'll definitely take any questions that you have for us in the chat. We will be joined by two guests today. Our first will be Chris Tyler. He is an accredited portfolio management advisor and options trader. And then at 8:35, we're going to have Brett Golden on the line. He is the founder of a few different platforms, Chart Lab Pro and iView Markets. He is a momentum trader. He's going to talk to us about how he approaches his trading. Joel, how are we doing the S&Ps this morning?
A little bit in the red here by 4 points. S&P futures pre-market high is 2365.75. Pre-market low 56.75, and those are just above, and the high is just below yesterday's high at 66.75. We'll keep an eye on that. The low is just above yesterday's low at 53.25. Crude hanging up over 50 bucks at 50.22, but down on the session by 13 cents. We'll see if it can hold 50 for at least a couple days here. And gold and silver in the red last few days, but really not moving far much from that 1250 level. Gold down 1241.10 and down 390, and silver down about 8 cents. Dennis, how you doing on the end of Q1?
Well, and that's a good point you're making here. So it's very quiet right now, but you know, on the close, sometimes you see some fireworks at the end of the month, and especially at the end of the quarter. So we are at the end of the quarter here, obviously, and sometimes you have institutional jockeying. You can call it window dressing, call it whatever you want, but a lot of times still, you just have end of the quarter reports coming out. Institutional money managers will move money around at the close on this day, sometimes chasing the winners, sometimes selling off some of the losers for the quarter. So it's not a bad idea to maybe track, you know, what's performed pretty well this quarter and what hasn't done so well, because sometimes you see some follow-through movements at the end of the quarter. So that's one thing to keep in mind if you're trading here near the end of the day. But I'll tell you this morning, Joel, it's pretty quiet.
Yeah. Overall, we had a couple tweets last night from Trump. One regarding negotiations could be tough with China, and I think that kind of spooked the market. That kind of coincided with a little bit of a sell-off. And then also there's a little trepidation about, you know, Michael Flynn looking for immunity to testify. So, I mean, there's some Trumpness. I think that's what we can attribute the decline in the market to so far today.
Yeah, and, you know, a little bit of profit taking from the last couple of days, because this has been a pretty impressive run in the S&P futures here, Joel. You know, we're talking, you know, just, you know, a few days ago at the beginning of the week saying maybe the buy the dippers eventually come in here. Well, they came in, and they came in hard. And give us a little breakdown here on the technicals on the S&P futures, because we have had – are we through the 50% here now of the move?
We're dancing there, Dennis, just dancing.
Dancing there. Oh,
yeah,
dancing.
Yeah, that's like – I think I mentioned that earlier in the week, 23.58. Bases the June contract, that's from 23.98 down to 23.1775. Let's just call it 23.58, smack in the middle. We have taken it out. We have closed above it once, but still seems to be a little bit of a magnet here in the market. If we clear yesterday's high is 66.75, things open up quite a bit to the 23.80 handle. But just seems things just kind of tight here. People are relieved about that pop off the low here, and a little trepidation here. Spoos are starting to come back, but yesterday's high, 66.75, that represents the rebound high, 50 points above that low we made on Monday morning.
One earnings report to talk about here of significance, and it is BlackBerry and BBRY getting a pop on this earnings report. Spencer, give us the details, and then we'll break it down.
Yeah, I mean, I didn't realize we still really cared about this stock, but apparently we do because it's a big name. If not,
we care about BlackBerry, a Canadian company.
If not a big business. Q4
Waterloo, adjusted, Ontario.
Q4 adjusted EPS of 4 cents compared to a 3 cent loss estimate. So hey, look at that. Or actually, that was in the same quarter last year. It was a 3 cent loss estimate, and they made 4 cents of EPS last quarter. So they beat that number. Sales of $297 million is what they reported. And they start and they see being profitable for the fiscal year of 18. So
we like profitability, so that's a good thing here. But BlackBerry here getting a little pop. I mean, I've seen this in the past though, where this thing pops on earnings, and it seems by the end of the day, it always seems to leak back down and give it back. So am I getting all excited and jumping on the BlackBerry bandwagon here? Nah, I don't think so. This thing has been range bound here for the better part of 2 years, Joel. Give us some technicals and your thoughts.
Where's Waterloo, Ontario?
You know, we're Waterloo. It's only like 2 hours from where you live.
Okay.
It's about an hour. It's about an hour west of Toronto.
Okay. All right. One level. Dennis, I know you like this. One level only. I'll call it 750. Trading at 742. High of the pre-market session, 745. Had a high right at 750 and 752 back in February. So you clear that. Clear sailing for BlackBerry. If not, back and fill back to the $7 area.
It's a good point you're making. Like, you get through 750, 755, 760, then you start thinking $8, you know. And there is ways to, you know, if you're just, you know, trading in these little gaps between the levels, there's money to be made in there. You know, eight is a huge hole, psychological number there. But, you know, if we were to clear it, I agree with you, it opens up. So sometimes, you know, the best thing on the charts, look where it opens up. And, you know, if you start to get in throughout that area, it's like, okay, well, we can move through this area pretty easy because there's not much in here. So, you know, that's something to consider when you're trading is, you know, just those little gap areas, or just not even a gap, but just those areas where, you know, the prices move through quickly before. Because when it moves through quickly once, it can move through quickly again. And I agree with you. You know, above 750, then you start thinking about $8.
Yeah, and remember we had Mojo Mike on? That was the way that he liked to trade when it came through the whole numbers. I don't know. That was quite a few years ago. Popping new.
You know what? That's a good point. Like he made though. He used to say, and it was more like my magnet thing. Like once you get up into the big whole numbers. Let's say like a big psychological $50 level on a stock, just stock XYZ, $50, and stock is trading 49.50, 49.80, gets up to 49.90, it almost always goes to $50. So what he would do was actually come in and start buying the stock at 49.88, 49.90. You know, thinking, okay, they're going to go through 50, trigger some stops there, and then he would sell it, you know, at 50.05. So just a scalp on some big size shares, and he'd come in there and sell it for 10, 15 cents. And he's like, it almost always works. And I think he was the one that said, didn't he have like a 300 trade winning streak or something? We were like challenging whether that could be accurate, but you know, maybe. You never know, I guess.
That was a while ago. Hey, Dennis, you got any news for Jay Adorno on Canadian Imperial Bank?
DIBC got upgraded here today. So, yes, I do have news for you. CM catching an upgrade at Credit Suisse. So, just upgraded to neutral, though. Hasn't had a trade here this morning. So, CM is just trading. But, you know, if you're thinking, you know, an upgrade from CIBC, you can move it up. It probably trades a little bit higher here today. Stock has been on an incredible run, 4.5% dividend here. I do own this one in my investment portfolio. I've had it in there for about a decade. It's been a good one for me because, obviously, the stock is not that far off its all-time highs. But CIBC, and one other thing to consider, too, is, you know, when you look at it on a U.S. chart, it looks like it is still 10% off the highs. But bring it up on a Canadian chart, on a Canadian basis, because the Canadian dollar has been very weak against the U.S. dollar over the course of the last year and a half. That's to do with oil prices. If you look at CIBC on a Canadian basis, we're actually, you know, well above where we were in 2014. So that's where, you know, so the stock has actually made new all-time highs this year, just not in U.S. dollars.
Big volume yesterday. Normally trades 350, 400,000, traded nearly 7 million shares yesterday. So I don't know if you just had just a big, obviously big buyers and big sellers, went all the way down to 84.72, getting a little bit of a bounce. I'll tell you, I don't like seeing a big candle like that on heavy volume. That's the bad news. But the good news is here, that low that you made at 84.72, there's a couple other lows at that area back in late January, early February. So that's good to go north, you know, getting a rebound off that heavy volume day. I just wouldn't like to see it take out that that low from yesterday. I'd be a little scared if it did take that out.
Ace is mentioning about SORL as being one of the big winners of the day, and he is correct. The stock is up 38% here in the pre-market, getting a huge lift. Sorrel Auto Parts, I know nothing about this company here, so I'm assuming there's some news here this morning. Spencer, do you got something on SORL Ace here? Because
yeah,
the stock
earnings.
Is up big.
Yeah, they had earnings. Yeah, it was Q4 EPS of 43 cents versus 31 cents in the same quarter last year. Sales of about $83 million.
Big move here, SORL, Joel. What are your thoughts?
Well, pre-market, I'll just go kind of the same thing as I said with the BlackBerry. Pre-market high is 460, currently trading at 450. You clear that area, and I'll give you three monthly highs at the $5 level, just right up there, nice psych level. So, yeah, I agree with you on this one. If you can keep it going, those three monthly highs in a row right around 5 might be some resistance in the issue. Pulling back, long way to go to get to the top of yesterday's range. Got to get in the lower $3 handle. But right now, it looks like they're trying to push this thing to $5.
Got FMC is a big mover here today, too. It's up 10% here in the pre-market. It sounds like they're selling some stuff to DuPont here. Spencer, what do you got? FMC.
Yep, DuPont will buy FMC's health and nutrition unit for about $1.6 billion, $1.2 billion of which will be in cash. And that's it.
It's a big move up here for FMC. Windfall, I guess, for shareholders, trading up 6 points here in the pre-market. Joel, technical thoughts?
Well, I mean, 69.97 pre-market high right near your psychological $70 level. Bad news is you've backed off a couple bucks on there. I think it just might not be such easy sledding going back up to that $70 level. You also haven't been in 70 in quite some time. In July of 2014 is we'll have to go to get some daily levels. 71.54, that was your high back in July 2014. You know, 70 psych I'd be looking at as resistance.
Not much in the book I was just looking, but it's so early. Sometimes the book doesn't fill up until you get closer to 9:30. But not seeing much in the book. It's traded some fairly active volume, so I don't know if there's going to be size that holds it down. But big pop here for FMC. Just other stocks here, like we're scrambling a little bit, but I do want to jump into a couple ratings changes here, just the main ones before, and we'll catch the other ones after. Big one here on my list, Alcoa. It's getting upgraded here this morning at Bank of Montreal, upgraded to outperform. It had a pretty good candle yesterday. This was interesting trading yesterday. This Alcoa ran from $32.50 all the way up to over $35 and then settled and came back down to $33.49, but a huge candle. Getting a little lift here this morning. You know, that $35 looks like a big bogey now. Kind of sticking out like a sore thumb from the high yesterday.
Oh, yeah. Yesterday's high, 35.14. Just a couple of other daily highs just above that, 35 and a quarter, 35.36. So you are getting the upgrade. You are getting the boost. But sellers lurking at the $35 area, coming back on the downside. Probably not trading up on much volume here. Beam a couple thousand.
9,700 shares.
Yeah. I don't know. I mean, if this is good to go and it you know, comes back down to the close, 33.49, I'd call that support.
Jumping just one other ratings change here of note. GLW, which is Corning, is getting downgraded at Citigroup here today. The stock's been on a pretty impressive run. And really, when you put it in perspective, this stock's been on an impressive run for a number of years. Back in 2012, the stock got down to $10. It's now $27 here and $27.50. It is trading down here in the pre-market. Very light volume, only 600 shares, but it is getting downgraded at Citi, and that usually will put a knock a stock down at least 1%.
Let's see. We're trading down in the pre-market. I just see all those lows under 27 here. Call it 26.80, 26.90. Down there four times in a row. I expect that to be support as well. In the chat, V-Ray, that was a stock that we talked about last week, had a huge run-up. And it's come back down finally. $8. Let's see if there's doing anything in the pre-market. Nice, healthy pullback here. Keeping
just
an eye.
Out.
Yeah, just I keep an eye on $8. Looks like the last 2 days' lows were, or not yesterday, but Tuesday and Wednesday. And Spencer just wants a quick update on Fizz. Dennis, I got some bad news. It's not a 15.
You called it, Joel. You're saying.
Not a 15-day winning streak. It's now it's over. It's done with here. I don't know. One red day. Who knows? It just might start ripping again today. I'll be keeping an eye on that all-time closing high yesterday from 84.40. What do you got at 8.15 for us?
We got to take a quick break to bring on Chris Tyler. He's had a 20-year career on Wall Street at various investment firms. He's worked at places like Timber Hill, Philip Morris. He's now an options trader and portfolio management advisor. So we'll be right back with Chris Tyler.
Welcome back, traders and investors, to Benzinga's Pre-Market Prep, brought to you by Benzinga Pro. I'm your co-host, Joel Alconin, along with Dennis Dick, Spencer Israel, behind the glass. And we have Chris Tyler on the line, accredited portfolio management advisor and options trader. Chris, how you doing today?
Oh, I'm doing really good, except for it is 5:15 out here in this Pacific Coast.
Oh, okay.
But I am used to that by now. I've been out here, you know, since 1996, so it's not exactly, you know, it is old hat at this point.
All right, Chris. So when we ever get a 20-year veteran of the Wall Street and being on the floor, we always like to ask for like a good floor story. You know, it could be something you were involved in, or something else that you experienced. You got a good floor story for us?
Oh, well, let's see. How would a 13 standard deviation move in Philip Morris sound?
All right.
That's pretty extreme. Well, basically, that was my, I guess, initial wake-up call to learning about risk management, really learning about risk management. As a market maker, a lot of people take it for granted that you're out there buying and selling, scalping inventory. And to a degree, you are doing that. That's why you were down on the trading floor as an options market maker. But at the end of the day, you also quite often end up accumulating a lot of inventory. And it was actually almost to the day, and I forget if it was 1992 or 93, not to date myself, but it was April Fool's Day, and it was literally called Marlboro Friday back then when this happened. But Philip Morris was knocked down on a 14 standard deviation move. Stock opened down $13.62, which Philip Morris just didn't do anything like that back then. It was all tied at the time to a first class action lawsuit that was occurring in the name. Basically, I got into the office on April Fool's Day. As I said, this was, you know, 20 some odd years ago, and people were, the other traders in the office, like, "Hey, Chris, Philip Morris is down $8 in the pre-market." And my reaction was kind of just to laugh it off, like, "Are you kidding me? This is Philip Morris." And I've been trading Morris at that point for, I guess, probably close to 2 years. And probably the biggest move prior to that that I had personally encountered was maybe a dollar stock move up or down in the pre-market. So this was really massive. And you know, that, as I said, woke me up to the idea of what risk really was and what it wasn't. My portfolio at the time, along with all the market makers in the crowd, was essentially net short puts, which is great for income generation up to a point. On a day where the stock gaps down 13 5/8, not so great. So as a market maker, we did have the opportunity to trade around that. There was a lot of mispricing going on. People were speculating whether or not the dividend was safe. So there was a lot of interesting longer term trading around that dividend, whether it was going to be safe or it could be cut or if it was going to be dropped altogether. At the end of the day, within a couple of weeks, we made back the bulk of our trading losses in that. And, you know, from there, I would say that, you know, really kind of ended up personifying the type of trader that I wanted to be and learning how to manage risk. So,
yeah, so you worked out of it.
On the lighter side, the trading floor was a phenomenal place. And when we weren't, you know, when Philip Morris wasn't screaming lower by 13 5/8, there was a lot of, you know, paper tomahawks on other traders' backs and talcum powder on the bottom of feet on newbie traders. And we'd be doing dances and circles around them, that type of thing.
I see you work for Timber Hill, and just any comments on them recently pulling out of their options market making? Any comments on that?
No, and to be quite honest, I wasn't even aware that they were pulling out of the market making business. So Timber Hill, of course, and actually I shouldn't say of course, because most people don't realize that Timber Hill, which I worked for, was a branch of Interactive Brokers before it was Interactive Brokers. Timber Hill was the floor trading unit. That's how they started business. And they were actually, if not the first, one of the first handful of firms that did computerized trading on the trading floors. And they were known for doing global arbitrage of volatility. So a trader like myself, which I started off as a clerk at Timber Hill, that was my second firm. But as a trader, the market maker for Timber Hill, you were essentially making buy and sell decisions off of their models. And that was based off of what other traders were doing across the country and across the globe in all different, in currencies and possibly commodities, volatility trading. I always traded equities for them or equity options, but basically a lot of what I did, which might not make sense to other traders in the pit, would make sense to Timber Hill. They were buying really low volatility in one market and selling higher volatility elsewhere. They're doing a lot of basket trading. As market makers today, it's such a different animal, and I'm not sure where their focus is and, as I said, what they're doing and what they're not doing. I'm not quite sure. My one tie to them today is as an advisor for a few closely held accounts, I do have that all set up out of Interactive Brokers that I use as a trading platform.
Chris, Dennis Dick here. I just wanted to jump a little bit further into, you're a market maker on the floor. You're talking about, Timber Hill electronic market maker. What are your thoughts here on market making today? Just before we jump into stocks, what are your thoughts on market making today? Because it's evolved so much. I mean, we went from floor traders to full-on electronic market makers. You got five or six firms running the show here now. What are your thoughts here overall on how the market has evolved into electronic market making?
Well, I mean, that's it. In a nutshell, the market is, gone from the days of basically humans on the floor like myself, screaming on the floor quite often if you're in an open outcry environment, to most of it being handled electronically as it should be. There's this really very little reason for having, direct human interference. Now it is being run, electronically by all the quants. And, that's just the nature of the game. Even if you aren't making markets, the market is just so computer driven by all the HFTs and algorithmic traders out there.
Is that concerning to you at all? Is it concerning to you at all that, they don't maybe have the obligations that you guys had as market makers to step in and be that buyer of last resort?
Yeah, and again, I'm a throwback to, a day where it was a more personal business and you physically stand in that pit face to face with the broker and, depending on the market, pardon the French, if the ship, really hit the fan or if you just couldn't handle, trading a position anymore, you might just physically remove yourself from the crowd just so you wouldn't have to buy or sell anymore that day, before you could regroup and, kind of figure out where your risks stood. Today's market makers, they're electronic, but, this has been evolving for, 2-3 decades now. NASDAQ has always been, the electronic exchange in a sense, from telephone lines to now, high-speed connections, T1 lines that are, set up inside of the exchanges. I don't think the market making is so much of a concern. I see the liquidity is there. Liquidity in most names is just so much greater than it ever was 20 years ago. And a lot of that is because of the access to the markets, the fact that these larger players, they have the deep pockets and they can, make these decisions and they can support that type of, demand at any given moment. And then just like Timber Hill, you know, they aren't just trading a Philip Morris or an Apple computer. They're out there and typically, you know, they are trading massive amounts of stocks and options on those stocks. So, you know, they can quite literally take down 10, 100 times more volume than I ever could as a market maker when I was working as an independent for a smaller partnership. And I had just one or two products that were my bread and butter. I would have to think carefully, about my sizing every, with every buy and sell decision. So it's a lot different.
So tell us what you're doing now, Chris. Made the transition from the floor, doing some option trading, managing some money. You want to give us a little update and perhaps some things that are on your radar today?
Yeah, so as I said, I worked on, the trading floor, both, in Amex, and I found my way to San Francisco as a market maker for a number of years. And then it's been about the last 15 years or so I have been off the floor, and I found myself trying to work as a day trader unsuccessfully, I will say. And, maybe part of that was basically, tied to my experience on the floor and trading positions and having that mentality of more or less either swing to intermediate term, even long-term positioning, rather than looking at the ticks on, a one-minute chart, three-minute chart, five-minute chart, that sort of thing. But during early on, after leaving the floor, I ended up writing a couple articles, and those articles caught the interest of a trading education firm out of LA, Trading Markets, and I ended up working for them full-time in their market war room as an analyst and moderator. And from there, the rest is history. I've been more or less steadily writing freelance for just about 15 years. As I said, most recently, I've added a layer to that, working as private advisor on half a handful of closely held accounts at Interactive Brokers. And I am also currently working on, slowly, but it's getting there, an ebook that I plan on having published on Kindle sometime this year, and it'll also come out in a PDF format. And that is, pretty much my story. As well, I'm also looking into, going into some mentoring and using Skype as a vehicle, Skype and instant message, but that's in the beginning of stages as far as hatching out that framework as a business.
So yeah, premium seller, buyer, what's, give us some of your strategies. We talk to people that do option spreads. Tell us a little bit about your style.
So definitely a spread trader. And getting back to Philip Morris, where I found myself net short puts as a position, and basically learning about the hard way about really being just net short puts. From that moment on, I think I became much more of a trader that finds his positioning through collars or through variation of collar positions. So, and typically a collar is a neutral position. It's a spread, like a vertical, where you bought and sold a contract. They offset one another. There is some directional risk depending on the placement of that spread versus relative to where the stock is. But that's the type of risk that I prefer these days, rather than trying to just collect naked premium and not really having a good, strong foothold on risk in the event of some type of market calamity.
And what are you looking at today?
So today I'm looking at a couple stocks. And I would say probably the first stock that I'm looking at that's of interest, it might not be a position for everyone, but from a swing standpoint, Chipotle is looking interesting. I think everyone knows Chipotle. I definitely know Chipotle. I've been having a kitchen remodel done for the last five months, and I've been eating Chipotle literally every day.
How you feel?
But bloated? No, good stuff, actually. I mean, it's super easy. It's healthy. So I love Chipotle, but, so Peter Lynch would probably say, you're looking at Chipotle, that's a good thing, right? Eat and invest in what you know. So anyway, Chipotle, as a lot of people do know, it's a turnaround play at this point. They had the couple health scares, which now the first one being almost a year and a half ago. It looks like, in my estimation, that investors have started to take interest in the name once again. Over the last several sessions, shares have rallied aggressively about 10% from a nice channel support area. It was also a 50% retracement from the November lows, which was a 2 or 3 year low after shares had corrected 50% off their 2015 highs. So to say that CMG has done the work in correcting and that it's out of favor or out of flavor in this case is an understatement. That said, shares have, you know, had quite the pop the last several sessions. That being said, what I do like is the idea of a put credit spread and one that's placed slightly below the market. So with shares near 444, April 435, 430 put spread is priced for about $1.30 mid-market. That looks like a nice opportunity to potentially capture a credit if CMG stalls, it moves higher, which I don't expect it'll move that much higher short term, or if it declines less than 2%. If shares do correct harder than that, this is the type of opportunity for a longer term trader that wants to pick up a name that has been out of favor, as I said, for quite some time at a discount to today's price. So I like Chipotle.
All right, and boy, that 450 area, boy, that has been an area of resistance here going back for clears 450, you're in good shape on those. That's a big number.
Yeah, I would say so. Like that whole 445, 450 area, it's been, you know, hit on four prior occasions over the last 8 months. So yesterday just pierced it. It just kind of closed slightly below there. It's been good momentum. Chipotle does have short sellers in it, you know, so of course, you know, we can look to some of that price action just being people covering their position, but probably for a good reason, more than just a technical cover. People might be getting that sense that the downside in this name has played out at this point.
Chris Tyler, portfolio advisor and options trader, joining us here on Benzinga's Pre-Market Prep. Chris, thanks a lot. Great input. We'll like to have you back on again soon.
Hey, thanks so much. I enjoyed the time with you guys.
All right, 8:34. Spoo's just creeping back, only down 2.25. What's up, Spencer?
Can we get a quick imbalance look before we go on to our next guest, Dennis?
Let's take a look and see what's hot off the press. It just came out at 8:30. Pretty small, quiet morning, quiet imbalances as well. I do see Twitter, 44,000 to sell. Just keeps hanging out in the same area here, Joel. It's really getting tight near now. Yesterday's range only 18 cents on Twitter. ConocoPhillips, 48,000 to sell. That closed right on the button at $50. Maybe a few people taking profits from yesterday there. AT&T, 111,000 to buy. That is of significance. Interesting candle for AT&T yesterday. It caught a nice bid. So there's a couple of note. Otherwise, they're all pretty small.
Okay. 8:35, Spencer. We got another guest coming up.
We do. Brett Golden from iView Markets. So we'll be right back there with Brett. Welcome back, traders and investors, to Benzinga's Pre-Market Prep. I'm Spencer Israel here with Joel Elkanen and Dennis Dick. We're online now with Brett Golden. He's the founder of ChartLab Pro and iView Markets. Brett, how's it going today?
Good, guys. How you doing?
Doing good, doing good. Tell us real quick a little bit about your background and kind of how you ended up where you are right now.
Well, I've been in the industry for about 23 years. Started out at a family-owned institutional asset management firm. And when that was sold, I went to go work for the founder of Barra, which was institutional analytics. And that actually was acquired by Morgan Stanley. And so I worked for a new startup called Advisor Software that the founder started. And then after that, I started my own brokerage firm raising capital for hedge funds. And then I guess it was shortly after the Great Recession, I teamed up, met a gentleman that was out of Deutsche Bank. He was a quant and partnered with Greg Tricoli and Louis Lukacs to provide these quantitative trend following models for ChartLab Pro. So I've been doing that, probably for the last 6 to 7 years. And then just last year, I created iView Markets, which does not have our proprietary models on there, but it's an agnostic data platform where you could do a lot of research. And we really focus mostly on relative strength and basic off-the-shelf technical analysis.
So we have now up on our screen a little chart that you sent over to me yesterday. Tell us a little bit about how you approach the markets.
Okay, so I don't know which chart you're specifically talking about, but is that for the S&P or is that Disney?
It was Disney. This is just an example that you had sent over the chart.
Oh, Disney, yeah. So what we try to do is we try to look at – well, everything we do is based around price series. That's in terms of technicals, we don't look at any volume. I don't look at any moving averages. And so what we try to do is look at information or data that is not available on a standard charting package, because we believe that if you're going to try to generate alpha, you can't look at the same information that everybody else is looking at. And we try to, in terms of trend following, the holy grail is how do you smooth out momentum volatility? Because in terms of trend following, you can get whipsawed in and out of positions rather easy. And what we want to do is we want to stay in a trend for as long as possible, as long as it's working. And that could be the duration of the holding period. It could be 30 days to potentially 250 days. So we have two models. We have a rating value that measures the strength of the trend, and then we have a counter trend model that measures the exhaustion of a security. And if you look at that chart, the rating value, as it increases, you obviously want to go long. And then conversely, the counter trend, as that moves further lower, it means more buyers are coming into the market, sellers are backing away. So that gives you the confirmation of what we call being robust to stay into that trade. Now, obviously, there is no forecasting, so we can't predict using any technicals or price series what will happen tomorrow. All we can do is look at what's happening in the price series as of today. And as long as the trend is getting stronger, we'll remain long. And that's a disadvantage in terms of trend following. But then again, I don't think too many people really could forecast price anyway. I don't think it's possible. And so in that, you'll notice that example, a lot of technicians, they'll use some type of momentum indicator, whether it be a MACD or an RSI. And you can see over the same period of time when we went long, let's say Disney, both our trend model and our counter trend is very, very steady. There's not a lot of daily price noise. So that is what we call robust. And over the same period of time, you had about a total of 8 sell signals using the RSI and the MACD. So, you know, RSI and MACD might be okay to enter a trade just as a general tool, but it does not allow you to remain in the trade long enough to capture those big parabolic moves or at the end of the tail of that trade that really where you capture a lot of that upside at the end. So that's what that chart is depicting.
So you're trading as are you a trader now, or are you mostly just kind of using building the platform?
Well, we were actually seeded 2 years ago by a large investor to run a number of portfolios. But right now we're not out there actively seeking to raise any capital. We're just coming on to our third year of our track record.
So then what do you, I guess I would say taking what you just said one step further, give us like a little bit of some insight into how one might use your platform, iView Markets, or like who is it meant for and what can you really do with it?
Well, you know, even if someone is a position trader or a day trader or a swing trader, you can have a number, and even if someone is a fundamental investor, you can incorporate a trend following process. Maybe it's 20% of your assets. I mean, I have day traders that actually use this just to get a general sense if a position or a stock is fully exhausted to the upside or downside, to give them a different view or diversify away from how the crowd looks at traditional technicals. So I think even it doesn't matter what your time frame is, or if you want to carve out a separate type of strategy using some of your assets, you can use this. The process is really, it's really three steps. And everything we do, the first step is what's happening with the macro environment in terms of the S&P. Because everything we look at is within the S&P 500 universe. So obviously everything's highly correlated. So is the S&P either breaking out? Is it trending up? Is there a counter trend reversal off maybe a 5, 10% correction? At that point, once you determine what's happening with the S&P, or even do we want to put new positions on if the S&P is exhausted? And I sent you a very good indicator going back to 1993 showing you that about 2400, the market was becoming a little exhausted, where on a long-only basis, you don't want to deploy new capital. So the first thing is, okay, what's happening with the S&P? The second step is, if the S&P is breaking out or we get a counter trend reversal, let's find the sectors that are working. And based on not the strength of the sector, but the sectors, because if you're coming out of a V-shaped recovery, the strongest sectors obviously could be defensive. So what we want to do is we want to find sectors when we're coming out of a V-shaped recovery or breaking out that are picking up in terms of momentum. And the momentum that we use is our trend following model, what we call the rating value. So then let's say energy is breaking out or it's increasing in the rating value. We will then drill down and then see, okay, what in terms of the energy sector is increasing in our rating value. And that just gives us a little bit higher probability to look to go long. So that's kind of the step that we use. And then the fourth step is really risk management, which in terms of trend following is the most important aspect, because you let the winners obviously run and you cut the losers. So we're going to cut the positions based on two things, which I think any technical or technical trader does. Anyway, once a position becomes fully exhausted using our counter trend, we will exit that position because there's probably a significant gain there. Or if we start seeing a tick down in the trend value, or if it completely breaks, we will then sell that position. And then we'll look to add a new position that is working.
He's Brad Golden. His site is iviewmarkets.com. I'm looking at the site right now. It's definitely, if you're a momentum technical person, definitely a great tool. Brett, one last thing before we let you go, and I guess what is the best time horizon you would say in trying to incorporate this information and your models?
You know, I would say if you're 30 days to even 250 days, you could really get some use out of the tools.
All right, Brett Golden, iView Markets. Brett, thanks so much for hopping on with us today. We will definitely talk to you again soon.
Thanks a lot, guys. Have a good one.
And 8:49 right now. Not much. I was keeping an eye on the markets and the chat. What during that interview, and not a whole lot happening this morning.
Guys. It's a snoozer. Yeah, the markets are very quiet here. I mean, we've moved around about one S&P point since we started the show here, Joel. So it is very quiet. Like I said, I do think you'll see some fireworks at the end of the day, though, because of the end of the quarter, you often see those continued moves. So I would be surprised if you see some follow through at the end of the day, but. This morning, open, looks like it's going to be slow.
Let's take a look at ExxonMobil here. Steve in the chat was noticing a big move in that late in the day. And I don't
nice
know.
Nice candle.
Big candle, big green candle, coming up against the $84 level. Let's see what kind of volume we had on that. Big buyers coming in the last bracket of the day, the last 15-minute bracket. Boy, 84, I mean, we've hit that twice since the end of January, snuck above it in late February a little bit, big candle. I mean, oil was moving up yesterday, but
yeah.
Boy, 84 looks like a hurdle to clear in ExxonMobil. Dennis, any comments on that?
The book's kind of littered here, actually. I'm just looking, even 83.70, which was the close. I do see, you know, some significant size there as well. So somebody trying to get out the close, 60,000 shares. So that is significant for ExxonMobil if that liquidity stays. Sometimes these are just opening orders. So you see it in the book, and just explain, you know, somehow how sometimes how the book works prior to 9:30. If somebody puts an OPG order in there, it will show up in the book. And actually, you know, the OPG order would cancel if it's not executed. So sometimes those orders will, you know, be gone after 9:30. But right now I see 60,000 shares to sell at 83.70. So it looks like somebody trying to get out the close. If that stays on the book, that becomes a hurdle. So, and it is obviously psychological level, cuts the close as well. So, and then you think the next level, probably 84 bucks. And then after that, you'd probably maybe look up to the 85 handle. But looks like you got some tough sledding here above 83.70.
All right, and let's see here. Gamecocks must be very nervous about the game coming up on the Final Four, but he wants our thoughts on CVS. Let's talk about some of these pharmacy stocks. CVS has been a great performer here.
It's not today.
Good, you know. What's going on with it?
Yeah, Spencer, what do we got on CVS? Because we've got CVS down $2 here in the pre-market. This is ugly.
I don't know. I'm looking, and I'm
all right. Spencer's gonna go. I'll go hunting here as well. So we're gonna be a race to see who can find this. We got Brentster even in the background here. This obviously just starting to sell off here significantly right now. It looks like CVS.
We got a new investment from Congress Asset Management. Is that that wouldn't be it?
I'm trying to find it here too. Well. The other thing you look at is the imbalances. The imbalances are 51,000 a sell. That's significant, but I don't think that would be driving it down 2 points. Chad, help us out here. We're looking. We're searching for CVS. Got to be something that just came out on this thing, though. Very recent. Maybe somebody said something on CNBC, but 77.10. So we are down 2 points. Joel, break down the technicals while we continue.
All right. Let's take a look. Ooh, boy. Breaking down through this $78 level. That was an area of four lows on your daily chart. Old support, new resistance. Oh, look how tight that thing had been for the longest
really tight.
Time. Wow. And now you're getting some news. You get a spike down to 76.35, excuse me. You got a little bit of a bounce. I don't see anything really on the charts below that pre-market low down to just above 75. You had a low at 75.21. This is back in February. But first things first, if you're looking for that level, you got to take out the pre-market low. Long ways to go to fill the gap. I would just even say that $78 area is going to be resistance.
I got courtesy of Brent Slab on the Benzinga News Desk, the CVS. Here is the news. It's contract to provide specialty pharmacy services for Blue Cross Blue Shield will terminate at the end of 2017.
Ooh.
Yeah, confirms 2017. Yeah, it wasn't gone. $2.8 billion revenue contract is going to end.
Wow.
So that's $2.8 billion you're talking about. That's big revenue coming off, so that's why it's getting hit.
Wow, that is interesting. And is it going to Walgreens? Walgreens Boots Alliance?
Well, and if you know what, and that's what you wonder here, because WBA is actually starting to catch a little bit of a bid here in the pre-market. So that could be the case.
Yeah, ARBs or Parachutes.
No, wait.
No?
I'm just trying to see. Prime Therapeutics? I'm just trying to look through my news feed here now.
What therapeutics?
I'm just trying to read, you know, more on this.
Okay.
It's hard. It's hard to digest it all. You know, you're just reading headlines here. We're on a live radio show here, but I'm just trying to see if they – I don't think it has announced who the contract is going to get.
All right. Can we do a
– ESRX?
Yeah.
That's pretty down here too. So ESRX is getting hit as well. There's a few of the stocks getting hit here. But
all
CBS
right.
Obviously getting hit the most.
So, Dennis, did you get down and dirty in Lululemon yesterday?
I don't know. I did not. And interesting enough, obviously, that the stock got down close to $50, what we were talking about. It bounced off 50-50. But we were saying, stock is down 52. It starts to, you know, think of $50 gets a magnet here. We are popping and bouncing back a little bit here. This one, I still wonder if $50 isn't a magnet for the stock, though.
Yeah, you know what? This one... the open trick was okay. It opened lower, immediately bottom at 51.75, and then it had one rip to 52.90, And if you didn't get out on that rip, you were dead meat because it came slicing back down through the open and just kind of withered away. You mentioned that 50-50 trading up 35 cents in the pre-market. A lot of technical damage done to Lululemon yesterday. It's going to take a while for that one to recover.
Retail did hold up well, though. Like what we said was, and I actually said this on the show, was I didn't think you were going to see the kind of sympathy move that you might expect from a lot of the other stocks because it was more Lulu catching up with the rest of the sector. And that actually worked out well for me because I was buying the pullback on a lot of retail stocks that opened in the red. I actually bought Sears Holdings off the hop.
You bought Sears?
SHLD. Yeah, because you know why? Because I was like, there's a lot of people who these stocks have been going straight up for 2 days, a lot of shorts who are probably scrambling and looking at this little down open as a possibility to cover, and it's exactly what happened. Sears Holdings, I quickly made 30 cents on that. I bought Nordstrom, JWN, on the opening print. I think it opened down about 30 cents. It popped immediately, too. So, and there was two or three others that I got, too. So it was good, you know, actually buying the pullback in the other retail stocks there. Worked out well yesterday morning.
All right. I just want to alert our Apple traders here. Not trying to call a top, but there is a double top in here at 140. Ooh, I'm just pointing. I'm not making this stuff up, Dennis. I'm telling you. Tell me not. 44.49. That was your high on Wednesday. 44.50. That was your high on Thursday. Tight range yesterday, only a buck range, and three closes here, right at the 144 area. The all-time high closing price as of today is 144.12, so very interesting. I'm going to move it down from 144.50, that's the actual double top, and just call this whole 144 area resistance for now, trading down 13 cents. In the pre-market.
I mean, the reason we point out these double tops is these are significant levels where, you know, a technician or even, you know, a technical trader might be willing to, you know, put on some risk because they have that double top. So they say, okay, I'm going to short this thing at 144 here today. If it goes up above 144.5, I'm going to cover. So, you know, you have people who are positioning in that way, you know. So that's why, you know, it's significant to, you know, you have an out. That's what I always talk about in trading is, you know, if you're going to set up a trade, you can put on any trade you want as long as you have a contingency plan, know where your out is. If I was shorting this stock, and not that I am because I'm actually long to my invest portfolio, but if I was, you know, saying I was going to short this stock, if it got above 144.50, I'd probably cover. But, you know, there's a bogey there now. So that is, you know, one thing to think about if you're trading Apple.
Okay. Are you ready? Are you sitting down, Dennis? Because
okay. What do you got for me?
NVIDIA.
NVIDIA? Joel doesn't even know. He's so scared to even say the name of NVIDIA or NVIDIA, but not NVIDIA.
110. Look at this area of resistance
huge
here.
Level.
Yeah, you just got to respect that. I hit it yesterday, 110 right on the nose, and you had 109.96. Trading 109.60 in the pre-market. So, boy, big level. Bust above that. I think he's kind of see some clear sailing. We'll keep an eye on that for you. And then also FDX, Federal Express, came back off the earnings, but now creeping back up here. Let's see if he can get some more follow through. This is 4 days in, well, how many days in a row trade higher here? I believe only 3 day in a row win streak, 94.34. I see that. Oh, trading up in the pre-market. Oh, really only two levels to give you, 95.14. That was the high after the earnings day, and then the earnings day high was 97.48. So shares of FedEx pretty volatile lately.
That's just in that range, though. It's the same range. And it's interesting how, you know, on that earnings report day, we went all the way down to that 184 level, and then we bounced all the way up to the top of the range, all in the after-hours session. I know on that candle you don't see that because that was the after-hours action. But, you know, it's interesting that, you know, 3 days later we sell off, and we sell off right to the point where we went in the after-hours session when they were digesting the earnings report. So don't tell me that after-hours action doesn't matter because, you know, it mattered in this case. And you look at this chart, and it's very, you know, trading in a range. Every time you get up at 195, 196, you find sellers. Every time we get down the 185, 184 area, you find buyers. So I guess you keep playing until it doesn't work anymore.
All right, 859, Spencer, you want to wrap up the show? Give us a little preview for next week.
Can we get a quick imbalance update, Dennis?
Let's go take a look here. Right. So they're growing a little bit. They're still pretty small. Quiet morning. Like I said, CVS, 64,000 a sell. Losing that contract is hitting that stock here this morning. Twitter is still 42,000 a sell. That is still small. Walmart, 25,000 a sell. I'm scrambling here, guys, because they are small.
Okay.
Bank of America, 64,000 a buy. Johnson & Johnson, 38,000 a sell. AT&T, 90,000 a buy. ConocoPhillips, still 57,000 a sell. Here's one, CRMSalesforce.com, 70,000 a sell. That is significant in market moving. That's about it. They're all pretty small.
All right. Looking ahead to next week's slate of guests, we're going to have Angie Setzer on the line. Can you believe, Joel? Angie Setzer, the goddess of grain, has not been on our show since July.
Really?
Yep. So
she's good.
She is good. So we're going to have the goddess of grain on, Paul Henneman from Value Engine, Lenore Hawkins, Matt Hogan from Finbox.io, Ryan Craver, one of our go-to retail guys. So a good slate of guests for you guys next week. That's it for us for the week. Hope you enjoyed our shows and our guests and our insights and our nonsense and our jokes. That is it for us. Have a good rest of your day. Have a good weekend, and we'll be back with you folks on Monday.
Whether you're a short-term swing trader or a long-term investor, you need to check out Thinkorswim, brought to you by TD Ameritrade. There's a reason why Thinkorswim has been named the number one trading platform, because it has it all. With Thinkorswim, you can trade stocks, options, futures, Forex, and virtually every other type of order. Get notifications on mobile devices and interact with other traders in chat rooms. You can also use technical indicators and see the latest investing and trading education in Think Money magazine. If you want to keep up with the markets, you need Thinkorswim. To experience everything Thinkorswim has to offer, open a TD Ameritrade account today. Thinkorswim, the online trading platform for traders and investors. TD Ameritrade, member SIPC. All investing involves risks.